A quick disclaimer. Opinions of host and guest do not represent the views or opinions of Functional Movement Systems. Always consult your physician before beginning any exercise program. This general information is not intended to replace your healthcare professional.
Welcome to the Movement Podcast. This show is all about movement. We tackle it from different angles, bring on guests, answer questions, go on a few tangents, and give practical advice, giving you guys a better idea of how you can optimize the human body to be the best it can be. Let's preview what's coming up in this episode.
Our guest is Eric Degatti. Eric brings a wealth of knowledge to the show as a coach, trainer, and instructor based in New Jersey. He's trained a diverse population of clients who include World Series champions, All-Americans, and Pro Bowl athletes. On this episode, we cover a wide range of topics, from movement readiness to injury prevention to giving athletes an edge. This show is packed. So let's get right into it with Eric on today's episode of the Movement Podcast, powered by FMS. Thank you for joining us today on the Movement Podcast. Today in the studio in Chatham, Virginia, we have our host, Dr. Lee Burton, Gray Cook, and we are thankful to have Eric Degatti here as well. Eric has had a successful fitness industry career of about 20 years. So how about you let our audience know kind of what it is you do now currently?
And I've been doing it for 20 years, so I started when I was five. But right now, I don't do a heck of a lot of hands-on training with individuals, other than referrals for certain athletes. I have contracts with a couple different schools that I work with and overseeing the programming for all their teams, as well as all the stuff I do here with FMS and education and content and going out and teaching when we can.
Yeah, Eric, you've had quite a diverse background. You're one of those guys that early in your career, you just took in all types of education. And I know we met probably 15 years ago when one thing I remember early on when we started working together is that you really fit in what Gray and I's vision was, because where you were working, you had chiropractors, physical therapists, you're the strength coach. I mean, you really did have that entire community in that, you're really making sure that you're communicating, across the aisle, so to speak, in professions. And I think that's one reason why you've been such a huge part of what we've been doing the last 15 years. I mean, kind of give us a little bit of why that was such a big thing for you.
Well, in this mission has created some unique bedfellows, and that a couple guys from Southern Virginia hook up with the Jersey boy, and it's Sopranos meets the Dukes of Hazzard. Up until that point, I got really fascinated by evaluation. And so at the same time, my brother was going to PT school. And so he was doing all that stuff, and I would sneak in his courses and borrow his books and learn the Shirley Sarman and Yanda and all that stuff. At the same time, I was doing internships with Czech and Poliquin and all this stuff. And what the sum of that was a really cool evaluation. But the problem was, it took me like an hour and a half to do it. And the other problem was, I realized at the end of the day, I was using probably 85% of this information. It was really cool to know exactly on a goniometer how many degrees of glenohumeral external rotation you had. But if you can't touch your toes, it didn't really matter. And so when I was looking to open up my facility, I needed to be able to scale this. And I was the bottleneck. I was the only one who could do the evaluation. So I said, if there's some way I could filter that. And that's when I discovered, the original Reebok screen, and then eventually what became the Movement screen, and said, let me give this a shot and see if this could be a filter. And so my whole staff was at one of the first certification courses. And I said, all right, let's do this. Everybody put your people through the FMS, and then when you can't figure it out, I'll take the rest. Well, after about a year, it became obsolete, and we were finding everything we needed to find for the most part within that system. And that was kind of the elegance of it, and it kind of set the footprint of what our whole facility is based on, to be able to have a communication tool to go to the chiropractor and say, look, I have a painful shoulder impingement, but a dysfunctional leg raise. I'll work on a leg raise. You work on the shoulder. Let's meet back in the middle in a couple of days and see where we're at. And there wasn't that turf war of whatever it was. We had very clear boundaries of who did what.
I've benefited from that facility twice. And the fact that you could take a no-look pass, meaning you and I could have a four-minute conversation and pretty much make the same moves on a case. Once was some VIP, and I don't recall, I don't know if he was flying in from the Hamptons or not in his helicopter, brought his limo over and needed a two-hour session. And I was able to fly in. You and I basically did the no-look pass for 2 hours. I think we got the case pretty much handled, but I knew I wasn't going to be there tomorrow, and you were, and I wasn't worried a bit. And the second time was actually when Tim Ferriss and I had been consulting on the 4-Hour Body and that long book chapter he did on sort of corrective exercise and reinventing yourself. And he asked me to prescribe exercises to him without screening him. But he goes, I do promise I'll get screened on the back end so I can see if I've arrived at function or not. And I remember Tim flew in and he was very close, and you were able to step up and get him a screen. And I think he did pretty good, thus showing that, I think that just a few functional exercises and a slight paradigm shift were rectified in the fact that you did a non-biased screen because you didn't know what was coming at you. But I've benefited from that seamless process that you were able to employ. So many people got stuck on how do I get this in my facility? And like I said, you tried everything else. It was labor intensive and didn't yield anything more. And you were able to hit that minimum effective dose of evaluation to action.
And the funny thing is most people, if they hear this, they would want to say, or someone who's in one of our courses, say, oh, I would love to see all the cool stuff you did with this guy. And they're thinking we have these, top secret magic tricks in our back pocket. At the end of the day, he learned leg lowering and how to deadlift. And that was what the issue was. He didn't know how to hinge his hips. And so it wasn't this mystical type of thing other than we just checked boxes and followed a system.
Exactly.
But you find what the person needs the most. I think that's the thing. Instead of just throwing stuff against the wall and the cool exercises, you're really trying to dial it in and figure out what does this person need the most today, but overall, what do they need the most to be focused on? And a lot of times it's what they shouldn't be focused on, removing some of the things.
Yeah, 100%. And seeing, are you even ready to take on stress? And I think that the trainer, the strength coach, the therapist of the future is not going to be this dispensary of exercises. It's going to be a pharmacist of eustress, the pharmacist of being able to put hormetic stress at the right level. And I don't care whether it's a Wim Hof breathing session, if it's a sauna, if it's a set of kettlebell swings or sprints, it's how much can I put into you where I can get you to that magic edge of your ability where we're going to see an improvement, but not redline you where you can't come back and be able to be better tomorrow. And that's, I think, where the art is going to be next in terms of what we do professionally, instead of just saying, here's cool exercises based on, what I saw on a test.
Now, I think it's been neat to see you sort of leading the FMS workshops. And even when you and I started teaching together at FCS, the first thing I told you was you're the lead. I'm assisting you because I like the way you run the room.
No pressure there at all.
I was going to say, I really would like to go back and see, did that actually work out?
I did.
Eric,
I'm honest about that. I mean, I assumed every course I taught with Lee, he was the lead because I'm not staying on schedule and the lead needs to stay on schedule. So I'm not the lead, but demonstrating how a few well-placed exercises changes the whole thing. It not 3 weeks from now. You're not asking these people, Matt, if he just does this for 4 weeks, I think this will be better. You're changing things on the fly, showing people how quickly, if we do think this is a functional problem, function responds quick, structure responds slow. So if I demonstrate adjustability in you right now, the whole future just changed because we don't have to work around this. We're working on this now. So
that's it. That's a big ego challenge in our industry because you're putting your stuff to the test. And so I don't have any fear of putting my stuff to the test to say, let's do this and let's see if it improves your standing long jump. Let's see if it improves your med ball throw or your motor control screen. And if it doesn't, I'm scrapping it right away because I'm not going to waste your time or mine or our energy to move forward with it. But we can't always be that humble sometimes in our industry to say, and I think that's what threatens some people about the system, is to say, this checks your work. And it's no different than if I'm referring out to a physical therapist. The real good PTs love me because I can fill in the blanks that they can't get to because they just don't have the time. But the bad PTs, not so much.
Well, it's going to change. And I think that's the other thing that maybe people, professionals don't understand to the degree that I think they should, or we all would think they should, is even if you do make that change, is what Gray just described, function is going to change quick. You make that change, it's a good chance it's going to revert back. No matter, you know, whether they're playing a sport, whether they run a 5K, whether they just, you know, didn't sleep well that night, it's going to go back. But at least you know the recipe to get them back to where they were. And hopefully the goal is to make sure that they don't revert back so quick next time.
I kind of came up with what I call the four questions when it comes to the movement thing. Is one, do you even need it? Right? And that's why we do a screen. Do you even need it? Like, you can tell me all the cool hamstring stretches in the world, but if you got a 3 in your leg raise, it doesn't do me any good. Right? The second is can you get there? Right? If I do these correctives with you, or whatever I do with you, even it's breathing, and it improves, it shows me you can get there. And that's the sale to the client, to the end user, to the athlete, to say, look, we just did this for 5 reps and you improved 20 degrees range of motion. Imagine if you did this 10 minutes a day, every day. Okay. That's going to make a huge impact. Well, that's only the second step. You're just renting that range. You don't really own it. The third step is, can you own it? Can you walk in cold, lay on your back, and show me that same movement? That's the third step, is can you own it? Well, even if you own it, you're doing it on your back. Can you actually use it? Can you actually get up on your feet and do it for what you need to do, whether it's loading bricks or whether it's throwing baseballs? I need to know, can you actually use this? And then I'm pretty confident that it's going to stick, as long as we don't screw it up in our training.
You know, when those magic tricks occur, and when we're teaching live workshops, they happen all the time, and they're not staged. We just find people with a movement bottleneck. You and I see where it is. And the very first question, it usually comes from the first or second row. Well, how long is this going to last? And I'm like, about as long as hydration lasts. It's something you got to maintain. And so you can drink today and be hydrated today, or I can give you an IV today. But until you learn to hydrate yourself, we're going to have a problem here. So a good movement correction lasts about as long as good hydration. And if you're not learning how to hydrate, and if you're not learning how to maintain function, it ain't going to last, because it's not my problem. It's yours.
Well, again, I think that the big key is making sure that you've identified why they had that problem in the first place. And take that off the table. Because if we're talking about a toe touch, or, you know, you mentioned toe touch or leg raise, if the person has got a leg raise or a toe touch problem because they're running 20 miles a day, then maybe not running 20 miles a day is the first step, right?
Yeah. If, you know, you could be the greatest running coach in the world, but if they have a thumbtack in their shoe, you know, your skills don't really matter a whole much, does it? So we have to kind of take a global look at everything. And that's where, like, this whole world of looking into readiness, and you start to see all the gadgets that are out there now with it. And I've been my own guinea pig, and Gray, you and I have been talking back and forth about the last year of looking at the scope of things. And we're looking at heart rate variability and resting heart rate and these sorts of factors, but also looking at kind of movement readiness. And nobody really has that movement piece. And just instinctively, one of the things I started doing way back when I opened my facility is starting to do just a quick little overview. And since I didn't know any better, I just use the top tier of the SFMA. When someone walk in day one and say, look, I did your screen a week and a half ago. I wrote a program based on what I saw and based on your goals and all the other factors. But I don't know if you're the same animal that was in here a week and a half ago. You may have played 36 holes of golf, or flown cross country, or slept on the couch, or what might have changed things. And so I got to make sure I can stick with my plan. And so if you were supposed to deadlift today and now you can't touch your toes where you used to be able to, well, I have a couple things I need to do. First, I have to pump the brakes and say, all right, today's kind of what I call a yellow light day. Let's see if we can change that, improve it. And if it improves, then we can proceed with caution. If it doesn't, it just became a red light day. Today, we need to just scrap the plan, because that, you know, that's why you can't write a macro cycle for 4 months, neat and pretty, like you would learn in exercise science, because it may change. Or today may be a green light day. Maybe today you feel better and you're touching your toes and feels better than it ever has. Well, today may be the day to acquire that new skill, or to push that new PR, or to challenge you a little bit more, because you're showing me today you're more ready to absorb that type of stress.
So what you're telling me is, I show up, I'm in your presence. Your first concern is my current state of readiness. If I ain't ready, you're going to spend our time getting me back to that point. And if I am, you're going to spend our time taking me to somewhere new. Is it that simple?
It's pretty much that simple.
The question I want everybody listening to watch is, how many gauges are you watching to see if my state of readiness is what you think it is. Because the guy who's just getting ready to answer this question is watching way more gauges than most people do, which is why he's able to do the trick with the level of confidence he does, whether he's got on the mic at a course or whether he's doing the thing 6 days a week when he's not at a course. So give us those gauges you're looking at.
All right. So, you know, there's the movement gauge of looking at just your basic top-down movements of touch your toes and can you rotate, can you extend?
And against a previous baseline.
Exactly.
Right, right.
And then from there, we add in some things like motor control, okay? And then what happens is it's not even so much the test sometimes, is the conversation that the test opens up. And now all of a sudden their motor control, where they normally on a lower body will reach to 24. And now they're getting 21. Like, yeah, that ankle's a little stiff. I was playing tennis last night and I did something funky when I landed. They not walking in the door telling you that, but I discovered that. And now that, hey, that's something I probably want to know before I go and squat you. So that's where it opens up some conversations, looking at breathing and doing their breathing assessment. And you see that breath hold that's normally 20 seconds plus easily on any other day now is 12 or 13. They say, yeah, well, I didn't sleep that well last night, or, oh, I, you know, had too much wine at the corporate dinner. And now it's okay. Well, maybe I got to dial back the volume a little bit today. And so all these things open up doors to conversations where you can see really where they're at. And I'm not talking them into where they're at. They're telling me where they're at. One of the challenges that I found in experimenting with the straps and the HRV meters and so forth is that I have clients who come in and say, I don't know why I'm even here. I got a bad day today. My score already says that I'm low. Well, it's sometimes putting them through a simple movement flow and all of a sudden they feel awesome. They might have scrapped an opportunity to get better that day. So of all those metrics that you see, the one thing that hasn't ever lied to me is movement.
Now, I feel the same way because I do. I like the measured life. I like looking at those things in your rest and regeneration and activity that you may not be aware of. Sleep is always a problem for me, but when I wake up, I still got a day ahead of me, whether I got a good night's sleep or not. And Lee won't accept an excuse for me not being on
and
my
you
game.
Give them. Huh? You certainly give the excuses.
Thanks for not accepting them.
Well, Eric, I mean, what you're describing to me is not a big time piece. I mean, it's not going to take a lot of time to go through these things that you're
it's
talking
the first
about.
First 3 minutes of every session.
And that drastically changes the experience the person has when they're with you or when they're in the gym.
Yeah. And there's that psychological aspect of, wow, this is actually about me. This is not a workout of the day put up on a whiteboard that it doesn't matter who you are. You're doing the same thing. This is about me today. And you know, there's also I'm big into looking at some of these recovery factors. If we look at it the other way and trying to see what's the upstream problem here is to say, well, if this person comes in and they're consistently failing their breathing screen, motor control, what have you, but you notice that their HRV is always crashing. Their sleep is always terrible. Well, this is a lifestyle issue and I can't fix that with movement. And so that's more of a global 10,000 foot view that you're taking and say, this is what I call a 23 hour factor. This is what's happening in the other 23 hours when I'm not with you. And so I can't make that toe touch better until you start to sleep a little better.
But that awareness that you're giving them is huge. Just that awareness to say consistently checking those things and letting them understand that that's the bottleneck. That's the problem. You can come to the gym 5 days a week. If we're not addressing those things, you're not going to have the outcomes you want.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of learning through the art of messing it up. That's what you do in over the course of a 20 year career, you know, and people, they ask about, you know, talk about education. I always joke that I have my master's from SSU, the University of Screwing Shit Up. And so that's kind of where you learn those things and you start to learn, like, I've been doing the same corrections with this person for 3 weeks and it's not changing. It's not me, right? It's not the exercise. It's that it's what they're bringing to the exercise. It's not, I'm trying to plant seeds on concrete. It's just not going to grow there.
Lee took that education to the doctoral level. One other thing, when people day after day screw up their rest, regeneration, hydration, nutrition, I notice an accumulation of tension. they put on some of these parking brakes harder and harder. So leg raises get worse, toe touches get worse, squats get stiffer. I mean, and so at about 5 days of a toxic lifestyle, you start getting a lot of tension you're not even aware of because it came on so slow. Now, you could go buy yourself 45 minutes of soft tissue, but what I think you and I have both seen is going through some of these little movement flushes literally help you dump that tension that's accumulated. That may actually let you grab one extra hour of sleep. And if a third of that is deep sleep and some of that is REM, then now we're coming back out of the hole. So sometimes I'll actually take the biggest part of real estate of your workout and create a tension dump. It feels like a workout, but when I look at what we really accomplished, right, it wasn't that much.
Describe that. You said movement flush, tension dump. What do you mean?
All right. I may do something as simple as a toe touch progression. Just get you hip hinging in the sagittal plane. But after that toe touch progression, your posture is a little bit better. I may take that and do something that doesn't require a lot of complexity, like a few light carries or six position carries. We finish up with a toe touch progression. You're done. You feel like we've run a marathon or you've gone to boot camp, but really you just let go of some of that tension. And I can tell you're a little more organized because you're breathing better. I could have done a motor control screen on you, or I could have gone back to your worst movement pattern.
But what you're describing is kind of, Eric, what you were talking about, that guy, that person that walks in, that's looking at all their gauges and their meters and everything else that says, I can't do anything today. That's what Gray just described. And what you were talking about, this is kind of the same thing, is you may be able to do just a couple of minutes of, in Gray's word, movement flush, and get them kind of reset.
And that is, again, to the awareness piece of getting them understanding holistically kind of what makes them tick. And so there's a couple systems that I kind of stole and combined, because we're all just stealing everything, right? One is this bucket system, right? And then I kind of applied to the bucket the George Goodhart, the guy who created applied kinesiology. Not that I know anything about applied kinesiology, but his concept of a triad of health. You have your chemical, your mental, and your structural, right? Your chemicals, all the cells that are constantly changing over, and then the mentals, your thoughts and spirit that kind of tie it all together, and your structurals, your muscles, joints, and bones, and how that works. And there's things we can control and there's things we can't, right? I wish I could be taller. It hasn't happened yet, right? So, but I can affect my structure either positive or negatively through movement. I can affect my chemistry through what I eat. I can affect my mental by the books I read, the people I hang around with. And then all of that is interconnected. You do exercise, it affects all three sides. So the bucket system is, imagine three buckets, one represents each and they're all interconnected. And so there's also a fourth bucket that's kind of your reserve. And so that's how you can get away with staying out all night and still going out and having a great game, because you had enough in reserve. And that's because you did some good training. But eventually there's not enough cryo tanks in the world for you to make up for the fact that your tanks are just empty. And so understand that we can rob a little from this bucket to fill this one is getting them to understand the connection between everything, getting them to understand the connection where they might not have made that realization. One of the biggest things I have with my college and pro athletes is when they do get into using like a whoop strap or something like that, when they see their score the morning after they had some drinks the night before, and they just see how the recovery crashes. And they might have known it on a surface level, but not having that real connection with it and saying, wow, I didn't realize how much that set me back and lost me an opportunity to get better. And then I joke with them. I said, you know, one of the things you'll never hear in your life is, hey, man, you look awesome. You've been drinking?
One thing came up a couple times, and just for the audience that may not be familiar with it, could you explain the concept of motor control?
Sure. Motor control, we have both the lower body and upper body motor control screen. It's a single leg or single limb competency of how well can you stabilize on a single limb while having some sort of excursion with the other side. So whether if I'm in a push-up position trying to reach with the other arm for distance, or in a single leg position trying to reach with the other leg for distance. And there's so much elegance in that you're not seeing beyond just, hey, the foot and ankle and single leg stability, but more of where you are from a neurological standpoint in being able to connect all that and being able to even learn how to set yourself up and strategize that movement, right? And when someone's good at it, they'll say, well, can I go into a pistol squat or do I just reach forward and hinge at the hip? Whereas the beginner or novice or the person who's just not connected with their body doesn't even know where to start, and their heels pop up and they fall off, and you may have to coach them 10 times just to get an accurate score because they don't even know how to organize themselves over a single leg or a single hand.
Mm-hmm. Too many people see a strength or fitness problem and don't realize it's really the way you're organizing. It's really the way you're running your time and your coordination. And one of the things that I think you do very well with that motor control screen is he will change somebody's motor control, their ability to balance on one leg or plank on one arm, without practicing the subject matter. Meaning we don't do anything to practice your balance. And yet by dumping that tone or reorganizing your posture, your pattern, you balance better. And let's all agree, balance is a subconscious thing. You just tapped into the subconscious mind with something you did. Almost everything coming off this frame the rest of the day is going to run a little bit better and a little bit cleaner and seem a little stronger and fitter, but only because you gave them what we call that motor control, that reset.
Yeah. And what that's going to mean to each individual is something very, very different. And how I'm going to frame that, and quote unquote, for lack of a better term, how am I going to sell that?
Yeah.
You know, for the professional athlete who comes in, they don't really care what their motor control screen is. They want to know, how do I run faster, jump higher, you know, do all those sorts of things. But when I can correlate to a pitcher that this is the framework, this is the foundation everything is going to go off of, from your consistency to your force production, you know, that you can't fire a cannon from a canoe. And so you start picking that foot up and start your delivery. If everything falls apart underneath you, I don't care how many, you know, weighted ball drills or how many different body blade drills you do, you can't get the energy from the ground. And this is one of the lead culprits of it. And ironically, it's also, of all our movement testing that we do, it's one of the highest correlations with arm and elbow injuries.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment with Eric.
FMS 2 is designed for FMS certified professionals who want to take their FMS 1 knowledge to another level. FMS 2 builds on how to take movement screen results and develop exercise programming to positively influence movement health, competency, and performance. In FMS 2, you will learn essential strategies to correct movement dysfunctions in your clients, athletes, and patients. This interactive course focuses on a variety of exercises based on the fundamentals of mobility and motor control that are specifically designed for sustainable movement health. The learning environment is reinforced with detailed case studies for practical application in a variety of training scenarios. Are you ready to directly impact how well your clients move? Take a look at our upcoming courses and get started today.
So Eric, we wrapped up the last segment talking about the motor control screen and how you use it. And there's some data that says it does relate specifically the Y balance test, which is test motor control specifically, and how that relates to injuries. So basically, it doesn't prevent you from getting hurt. I think we'd all agree our jobs as professionals is all about injury prevention. But there's a big misconception on being able to predict, prevent, and then who's at risk. Kind of walk us through all those things.
Well, yeah, that was one of the weird labels that got slapped on us, is that, you know, we can prevent injuries. And the way I've kind of reframed that is to say, like, what this does is not so much prevent you from hurting yourself. It first and foremost,
what do you mean by this?
This screening doesn't prevent you from getting injured. First and foremost, it prevents me from injuring you. Like, I use the analogy of the expression, hey, you could walk out tomorrow, get hit by a bus. Well, I'm going to make sure I'm not the one pushing you in front of the bus, right? Because we have a lot of strength coaches and people on both sides of the aisle of fitness and wellness and performance that they're hurting people when they come in. We have the stats that people are getting hurt with fitness. And so the screen filters that out to say, well, what do I need to remove so I at least don't hurt you? At the very bare minimum as a professional, can I do no harm and not hurt you? So that's one of the big things when we talk about injury prevention. It's not so much preventing you from hurting yourself. It's preventing me from hurting you, right? In my programming, to say I was supposed to do an overhead press with you, but you have a painful impingement sign, or you're a pain on your shoulder mobility, that goes off the list. And so that right there, that was injury prevention. But then injuries on a whole, especially when you look at athletics, there's so many other factors, from how many hours you sleep. If you get less than 6 hours of sleep, your risk of injury goes up. Hydration, you know, can affect those things. All these other factors can be involved in, this is just one piece of this. This is just one box that I'm checking to say, if you're going to injure yourself, it's not going to be a movement problem.
Now, I think one of the things that I've heard you do in courses, and I think you and I've talked back, when we say corrective exercise, that's changing your state of readiness globally and maybe locally. When we talk about coaching exercise correctly, sometimes that doesn't fix problems. We expect you to coach exercise correctly. If you think that's a Turkish get up, read the book. If you think that's a swing, if you think that's a pull up, read the book. So I think we expect professionals to coach correctly. But when somebody is already broken or has a huge dysfunction, just giving them the exercise and coaching it correctly isn't enough. They still can't hear you through their body. So I think you make that seamless. I think a lot of people assume, I don't need a screen. I coach good functional exercise and I coach them correctly. But if you're coaching them on everybody, you got to realize 20% of those people are going to have pain in the screen. 50% of those people are going to have a huge glaring issue on the screen that your correct coaching won't change. They can't hear what you're doing. So I think it's very important. We got to coach what we coach correctly. And even that's not enough anymore. We got to sequester the people who can't even work there. We've got to do a supplement somewhere, but then getting them back off of that supplement is just as invigorating as being able to find what nobody else found.
It reminds me of a funny story. I had an NFL strength coach tell me, you'd be so excited, we put a bunch of corrective exercises in our warm-up. I smiled politely and realized this guy doesn't get it. And what I mean is that, okay, so which correctives did you put in? Well, what if you put in a bunch of shoulder mobility correctives? What about all the guys that don't need shoulder mobility correctives, right? You may actually make them more hypermobile. And what about the guys that need a leg raise corrections? You're not addressing them. And when do you know when to progress? When do you know that they've checked that box and they no longer need that anymore? So just blindly dropping them into a warm-up doesn't necessarily check that box for you or fix the right things on the right people. And that's the kind of the elegance of the screen, is it tells me, do I even need this? And then looking at it and wrapping it around to injury prevention, there's an analogy I use when I teach, is I use a water bottle. So if you take a full coffee cup or a full water bottle, and you can relate to this, Ashley, as a parent, if I rest that right on the edge of the table with half the cup hanging off, I can see your anxiety rising right now. My kids are 20 and 17, and I still freak out when there's something hanging off the edge because I know that's going to spill on the carpet. Like, there's a good chance that that's going to happen. But the reality is we could leave that there all day. It might not ever spill. I say that's kind of like a one on a movement screen. It doesn't tell me you're absolutely going to get hurt. It just says, I don't like my chances of it sitting out there. Whereas if I move it to the middle of the table and now it's a safer position, doesn't mean I can't get hurt here. I can still have somebody be clumsy and knock that thing over. And you could still get hurt when you have a three, but I like my chances a lot better here. And so if I want to minimize your risk, I want to try to get your movement as good as I can. So that's not going to be the factor that's going to hurt you today.
And that's the thing. I think as professionals, we need to understand how much room for error do we have? You know, we want to know that going in. I want to know whether I'm just walking in off the street, I'm going to go work out. I'd like to know, do I have a lot of room for error to do overhead presses? And if I've got a limited shoulder mobility, there is no room for error. I'm going to have a problem. And I think that's really what I see you describing, Eric, is screening and testing up front gives you an idea of how much room for error you have in certain movements or certain parts of your lifestyle.
Yeah. And so understanding the connection then when I go out and swing a golf club and to say, okay, well, listen, there's a lot of people who live this life with their fingers crossed, right? They wake up and say, I just hope today's not the day my back hurts. You know, I got a golf outing today. I hope today's the day, not my shoulder hurts. And that's really kind of a crappy way to go about life. And it's a lot of wishing and hoping with your fingers crossed. Whereas if I can say, look, before you go, do these three drills. And they notice that every time they do those drills, they never have an issue. That's an extremely empowering thing that goes way beyond an exercise prescribed for a specific movement score.
That's right. And at the end of the day, Gray mentioned corrective exercise. You mentioned corrective exercise. It's not so much we should be looking at prescribing corrective exercise. It should be we're trying to prescribe the one thing or the two things or the three things at most that's going to give you the biggest impact. So that person who's got the back pain or the knee pain, if you can just figure out one or two things to give them, that's going to make the biggest impact. That's really what we're searching for.
Let me throw something out there too. You and I were just talking today about a comment on the internet.
I probably wasn't listening.
No, you were actually the one that brought it up. Somebody was squatting on the internet and all of a sudden we had a police imperfection come in forecasting all this death and doom because her chin was 4 millimeters off. And my point is when a guy like yourself or Eric is talking about a corrective exercise, you have a feedback loop 72 seconds on the other side of that corrective. You want to know if you wasted your time or whether you got a teaching moment. When people comment on a movement with absolutely no possibility of a feedback loop, whether they're correct or not, I honestly think they're just talking to hear themselves talk and tell you how smart they are. But when I throw down a corrective, I'm expecting to change the world and I'm going to measure it so we ain't got to negotiate it anymore. And that's the difference in using a strategy and a system to allocate a corrective and owning it if you didn't change movement and not deciding to discuss it anymore if you did. This is part of your program until I say it's not, because it just carried a huge feedback loop with it. Meaning when we do that, those four things get better. We're doing that. And that's it. But when we make a comment and don't have that feedback loop at the end, I don't even know what to do with that anymore.
I can tell you this, the person who nitpicks that video on Twitter or Instagram, they've never managed a room of 40 guys trying to squat at the same time, because they'd watch that video and they would say, that's probably the best one of the 40, right? I got to worry about the worst one of the 40 that they don't hurt themselves. And that's where, you know, you lose sight of like, that's that you're trying to you're getting perfect in the way of good.
Well, I usually got enough business sitting in front of me in real time where I don't have to go on the internet and pretend to be anything. So that's just what I got to say about that.
And then there's also the question to say, okay, is that a movement competency issue? Can that person actually not execute the movement of the squat? Is it an exercise skill issue? Right? Maybe that person has a 3 in their deep squat, but they've never put a bar on their back. They've never been coached on how to actually do a back squat. And that's comes down to you as a coach. Or is it a capacity issue, a physical capacity issue, that maybe the first 3 reps were awesome, but it's that you're looking at the 10th rep after fatigue is there and you let them go 1 rep too long, or you put too much weight on the bar and it was great 5 pounds ago, but now all of a sudden you put too much load on. And so you have to be able to decipher between those 3 things. And if you can't answer those 3 questions, you can't pick apart my squat.
So your gauges are the FMS and a capacity screen, and then your knowledge of them and the environment that they got to survive in. And we can pretty much answer questions on general function, general capacity. And then what you know about where they're going is the specificity and the personalization that they require. I mean, we can make it more complicated, but why would we ever try to decide on these things without the metrics? Somebody's going to do surgery on you. I want to see the numbers. Somebody's going to take my driver's license. I want to see the numbers, you know, and show me why something's being restricted or something's being suggested.
And it's going to constantly fluctuate. What you have to do is constantly going to fluctuate based off of, again, like you said, the environment they're in, the goals they're trying to hit. We just need to understand that. And as long as we set a baseline and continuously go back and recheck some of those gauges, I think that's one of the frustrations I've had over the last 20 years teaching is, yeah, I do the initial testing, I do all that up front, but they never go back and recheck anything. And they think that's okay.
Yeah, if you're not checking your work, how do you know if it's even working? And then also the problem, going back to the conversation of taking a snapshot in time and making judgment on that, I mean, I've gotten the opportunity to work with some of the greatest athletes in the world, and they all have flaws. They just make it up someplace else. Now, the question is, at what metabolic cost, at what structural cost, at what psychological cost is that going to make? And so we can look at a baseball swing and look at one freeze frame of that swing and say, oh, his hands are in the wrong place or his hips are in the wrong place, but you didn't see what got him there and what happened afterwards that made up for it. And some of the greatest athletes that ever played any game have some of these flaws, and sometimes that's what makes them great. And I might not want to go and fix that. And it's not necessarily something that needs to be corrected, but by taking that one snapshot in time and assuming that's the problem, you don't know how many swings they took before that. You don't know what the scenario was surrounding it. So to take one snapshot and make all your assumptions based on that, just like I can't take a movement screen and so much predict what you can do. I can tell you what you can't do, but I can pretty much tell you what, I don't know if I can tell you what your 40 is going to be based out of that. I can't tell you how high you're going to jump based out of that. That's why we have performance tests.
And guys, listen, we've all made these mistakes. We've all tried to inject our expertise probably a little bit early in a situation. And what we're really trying to say is you don't have to do that anymore. We're sitting at a new place where we can gather the information, and the fastest answer usually isn't the best. The best answer is the best. And so I think we've all made that mistake. So we're not throwing snowballs at anybody. We're saying if you can collect a little bit more objective information, you are fighting a sea of subjectivity. Coaches, parents, athletes, patients, they all have an opinion that's a little bit wrong, or you wouldn't be on the job. So take all that in consideration. If you can find the weakest link and adjust it so, you will see a measurable change that nobody can deny. And it's almost like that wait for it. It always comes back around to exactly what you said. We're not trying to predict success, but if I pull out your dipstick and there's no oil on it, today ain't the day for a trip. I'm not saying, you know, anything else. So predicting failure is what most systematic models do much better than success. But if I look at all these typical places you could fail and you haven't failed, today's a good day to maybe reach for a little more success.
Going on 22 years of doing this, my favorite three words that I get more and more comfortable saying is, I don't know. And so whether you're the parent or coach saying, hey, what are you going to do with my athletes? I don't know. Well, what does that test mean? I don't know. Because I don't know until I see the whole picture. And at the end of all of it, I may not be the answer, right? The answer may be, right, we've checked the box. You move really well. You perform really well for your level of competition, your age, your size, and so forth. And the reason why you're not good at baseball is because you kind of stink at baseball. You need a coach and you need skill. And so being able to sit back and objectively figure out where that box I need to drop you in, what cohort you need to be in, that's the art of also being, as Kelly Stress says, a savage generalist. Being able to not just be a mile deep, but also be a mile wide, to know that in the course of a session, you know, and I get this question a lot, is that, well, what phase are we in? You know, I was brought up in, you know, you have your hypertrophy phase and your strength phase and your power phase. And, you know, I explained this to a pro pitcher I had the other day. I said, I got 2 months to get ready. I don't have time for those phases. I said, so in the course of a day, they may do some Feldenkrais, or they may do some sort of Alexander technique or some type of breathing thing. And then they may move on to one of our correctives or something that I learned from Katie Bowman. And then they may go and do something I learned from Louis Simmons and learning a 5-3-1 type of thing. And then they may progress to something I learned from Lee Taft or something that we got from a number of the people that I've soaked in all this information and stole this from, that I don't know what's going to be the right fix right now until I know what I'm dealing with, but there is no one method that's going to fix all the things that you need.
And I think we started to kind of bring this back, this injury prevention. Everything you just described is injury prevention, right? I mean, everything you're talking about is designed to create a more resilient, whether it's a professional athlete or whether it's just an individual. It's all wrapped up in there. And I don't think we need to get caught up into what's going to predict an injury. It'd be great if we could predict which athlete was going to get hurt. But that's, if you're an athlete, you're going to get hurt. I mean, that's the nature of the sport. I think everything we do as professionals is designed to create more resiliency.
The one thing we've been saying for years is one of the number one risk factors for a musculoskeletal injury in the future is a previous lost time injury in your past. Now, there's two ways to look at this philosophically. You're either permanently altered and can never get back, or your last injury left you with risk factors none of us are aware of, like an ankle mobility dysfunction or a movement asymmetry or some other thing. And I was describing this in the SFMA, and I commend you for using the top tier of the SFMA, like most fitness professionals don't, is you've already done the screen. You've got the formal report card. You're just taking a quick sample, and a top tier SFMA for somebody who's got your background's less than a 2-minute drill. The screen always comes before the test because a screen puts you in a category. A test tells you what the measurement is. Well, what's the assessment? It's what you do with all that. So the SFMA embodies all three of those things for a lot of people that haven't figured it out yet. The top tier is the screen. The breakouts tell you mobility or stability. And your assessment is, of these 12 problems, I'm working on this one and this is why. So the assessment that you're making is usually on a few screens and a few tests and a state of readiness that I'm dealing with today, and assimilating all that and still finding a productive way for this half hour to go is the assessment. And it's the hardest thing to teach, but if you didn't collect the data, we're not working with anything. So that's the art of the assessment, is getting enough data where you can make a yes, no, or a binary decision. And it's, some people say, well, I don't have enough data to do that. That's more of an experience thing then, because we make these decisions every day with a lot less data than people think we need to do it.
And that goes back to my original concept of having this overly in-depth evaluation.
Exactly.
Is that if you put me through an SFMA, I guarantee you I fail probably 12 of the breakouts. But yet you put me through an FMS and I'm going to get a 16 with no pain, twos or higher with everything. And so you would never get to that SFMA with me. So those, how much of those problems really problems and issues that we need to address in the laundry list of things that I need to do to get done what I need to get done today? And then there's also the issue, Lee, of well, define what injured is, right? And define, like, there's this no man's land. And that's kind of what I dealt with in my time in working with NFL players and specifically on staff with one team for 9 years, is that there was the training room where you went when you got hurt. And then there was a strength room that you're supposed to get better at. Well, there was the large majority of that roster that weren't really hurt enough to be in the training room, but they weren't really healthy enough to do that program that they were supposed to do in the weight room. So I was kind of that liaison to say, my job is to kind of filter out where are you at and try to get you healthy enough so you can do the weight room, but also build that rapport and trust with the players that said, look, I know if I go in that training room, they're going to put me in an MRI tube and it's going to be a whole cascade of things that's going to affect my contract. It's going to affect my ability to play this weekend. So can you figure out anything for me? And sometimes we did, and we were able to pull off some magic. And sometimes it's like, no, you need to go in there and get medical attention. But having that in between, because that's where that no man's land, where a lot of athletes fall. And you ask any athlete who's played anything competitively at a high level, is that they don't remember the last time they were 101%. Right. There's always some degree of that. And my job is to get them as close to that 100% as possible, understanding that there's degrees of it.
No, I commend you for bringing those two rooms closer together, because you've seen some of the same thing Lee and I've had to do. That used to be a pretty wide hallway between the weight room and the training room. And
with a lot of fingers pointing in between.
Of course, that hallway was where gossip occurs. Well, when you take away the hallway and there's nothing but a door between those two rooms, all the gossip goes away and we start using communication and accountability to help the athlete, not just to protect our career.
Yeah. And it's also understanding that there's some things that you're better off going in the training room than seeing me for. And then there's some things that I'm going to pass you right back to the strength coach, because that's in his wheelhouse. And understanding where our role is one of the key factors in all of this. And that's what an organization or team should be on the ideal level.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Eric, for being here today. We really appreciate you coming down and spending some time with us down south. So is there anything that you'd like to promote or where our fans can find you?
Easiest place is just go to my website. It's just ericdagatti.com, ericdagatti.com. And since I teach so many courses, one of the things I put right on the homepage is a Q&A and ask Eric. And so if you have questions afterwards, just go on there and fill out and it'll go right to me and I can hopefully answer your question.
Great.
Yeah, Eric, thanks so much for making the trip down.
Absolutely.
Thanks, man.
That'll do it for this episode of the Movement Podcast. Thanks for listening. And if you liked what you heard, please take a minute to subscribe, share, and review. If you want to learn more about our system and take the next step in your movement journey, visit us at movementpod.com. Until next time, remember to first move well, then move often.